Chapter 6. Han had no idea how they were going to contact Sa'ulo without getting caught. Every entrance to the den was sure to be guarded. In fact, Malik had probably assigned double sentry shifts, and the tunnels surrounding the lair would be tightly patrolled. Sa'ulo himself was likely in the bunk room getting some shut-eye. There was no way he or Kira could sneak in and wake the Rodian. They were still mulling it over in Old Man Paolo's cave when Kira jumped up and dashed through the opening. Han was on his feet, ready to flee. He was certain she'd decided to go to Proxima after all and rat him out. But she returned almost as quickly as she'd gone, and she was holding a whirring ratcatcher droid in her arms. "Saw this fellow rolling by," she said. And suddenly she grinned the biggest, brightest, most amazing grin Han had ever seen in his life. Had Kira ever smiled before? He couldn't remember. And that smile was memorable. I would have remembered that smile.
Wow, that was a good idea, he said.
Well, maybe. It's not like we have anything to write with. She sat down, the droid cradled in her lap, and opened the trap compartment. Hey, that's a dead rat inside, she said, reaching in for it.
Don't throw it out, Han said. We'll need it.
Kira grimaced. You're probably right.
No, I mean for my friend. He likes gifts.
She froze for a split second, a suspicious look coming over her face, before pulling the limp rat out by its tail. Okay, fine. A dead rat for your friend. Kira tossed it to the ground near the fire pit. It was small, barely a meal, but it was something. So how do we get a message to Sa'ulo without having anything to write with?
You can read and write, he said.
Yes. You? He nodded.
I'm okay with basic. A little Hatiz. That's it, though.
She said, I guess I could use blood. Rip off a piece of this skirt and write on it. He stared at her. Kira was a strange, strange girl.
No. Not necessary. I have a dog biscuit.
Like what Rebolt feeds his hounds?
Exactly.
He pulled the remaining half-biscuit from his pocket, and was glad to discover it hadn't suffered too badly during his headlong flight through the sewer.
Sa'ulo gave this to me, so if we send it to him, he'll know it's from me.
Han rooted around near Paolo's sleeping pallet until he found a hard, sharp stick, and began to etch into the flat side of the biscuit. Kira moved to peer over his shoulder. She smelled awful, like laundry cleaner mixed with rotting vegetables. What are you writing? She asked.
I think I'm saying help in Hatiz, Han told her. That or urinate. They're almost the same word.
Well, at least no one else will be able to read it if it's in Hatiz.
Exactly.
Han thought for a moment, then scratched something else below it in smaller, messier letters.
And this says, more biscuits. Well, I hope that's what it says.
He put the biscuit back into the trap compartment, then pressed the communicator button.
Find Sa'ulo, Han said. Bring him here.
He set the droid down. It gave one indignant beep, then raced away, through the crack in the wall and hopefully straight to Sa'ulo himself. The ratcatchers were barely self-aware, not like his friend Tool, who could evaluate and make decisions. Sacrifice himself. But Han was pretty sure the ratcatcher could find Sa'ulo and bring him back.
Now we wait, Han said.
Kira settled herself cross-legged on the floor. She leaned her head back against the wall of the cavern. You take first shift, she ordered.
Why me?
He said, stifling a yawn. If I'm going to make the plans, I need to get some sleep so I can stay sharp. She closed her eyes. Han frowned. He hated bossy people. But he took up a position near the opening that would allow him to keep watch. He didn't realize he'd dozed until someone's hot breath against his ear woke him up.
Han, friend,
came the whisper. Han startled but collected himself quickly. Paolo was staring at him, his golden gaze so close that Han realized the old fellow's irises really did glow. It wasn't just a trick of the light.
"Hi, Paolo," Han said. "I brought you a rat."
He indicated the dead thing near the fire pit.
"And another friend."
He pointed to Kira, who had slumped so oddly in her sleep that Han was sure she'd wake with a terrible crick in her neck.
Rat,
Paolo said.
Friend.
It was a bit disconcerting that those mms sounded exactly the same. Han moved toward Kira, placing himself between her and Paolo, just in case Paolo was trying to say that friends were delicious. This was the part Han hadn't thought through too well. He cleared his throat and told himself to be ready for anything.
"So, Paolo, my friend, is that all right if we stay here for a little while? We need a safe place."
Paolo cocked his head.
"You visit?"
"Yes. Can we visit? For a few hours?"
Paolo shrugged.
"Okay."
With that, Paolo sat down beside the fire, grabbed the rat, and bit off its head.
"Well, that went well," Han muttered.
Then he noticed that Kira was awake and watching him.
"Did you call him Paolo?" she whispered. "You brought me to old man Paolo's territory."
Yeah, maybe that had been a bad idea. But so far, so good, right? And when in doubt, brazen it out.
"Sure did," he told her. "Paolo is a friend."
Of course, Kira didn't need to know that they'd just met, that he knew almost nothing about Paolo, that coming here had been a huge risk.
"The White Worms will never think to look for us here."
Kira straightened, rubbing at her neck.
"They will, eventually. But you probably bought us some time."
She eyed Paolo with distrust. The strange creature eyed her right back, thoughtfully chewing his raw rodent. Then, mouth still full, he said to Kira,
"You ugly."
Han didn't know whether to laugh or come to Kira's defense. He was pleasantly surprised to note Kira's obvious amusement.
I'm sorry about that," she said, trying not to smile.
Paolo made a gesture toward her hair.
"Hair,"
he said.
"Too much."
Kira nodded solemnly.
"I get that a lot."
A ruckus near the crack in the wall made both Han and Kira shoot to their feet. The ratcatcher droid scooted in, followed by a small, green-skinned Rodian with mismatched antennae. Paolo reacted instantly, sitting erect.
"No, Paolo, friend," Han said. "This is another friend. Friend."
"Saulo," Kira said.
"Hello, Han. Kira."
"You came," Han said.
He couldn't remember being so glad to see anyone in his life.
"Don't hug him just yet," Kira said.
"Saulo, did you tell anyone where you were going?"
Saulo blinked.
"Of course not."
Kira looked to Han, who translated for her.
"Swear it," she insisted.
"Swear it on your dead parents."
"There is no need," Saulo said. "All is as the Force wills, and my word is my bond."
That made no sense to Han, but he translated anyway. While Kira tried to figure that one out, Paolo stepped forward and peered into Saulo's face. He said. Saulo started to back away.
"Han, who... what is this?"
Paolo said.
"So beautiful."
"I think he likes you," Han said.
Han introduced them. Paolo and Saulo both said the word friend a few times, and that seemed to be that. Paolo settled back down by the fire to finish his rat. Eyeing him warily, Saulo pulled a pack from his shoulder and reached inside.
"I brought dog biscuits," he said. "Proxima is looking for you both. She promised the position of head to whoever finds you, so Rebelt is prepping his hounds now. He plans to sniff you out."
He handed each of them a dog biscuit, while Han translated for Kira. After a moment, Saulo tossed one to Paolo, too, who rubbed it against his cheek.
"My money's on Malik to find us," Kira said. "Rebold isn't as competent, even with those hounds. Saulo, did you bring your data pad?"
"Always,"
Saulo said, retrieving it from his pack.
"It took some doing to get here, by the way. Had to sneak past patrols. And you're welcome."
"Thanks," Han said. "I owe you one, pal."
"Yeah, you do. What do you need the data pad for?"
Han retrieved the cube and handed it over.
"Everyone in the city of Coronet is looking for this. Maybe on all of Corellia. We need to know what's on it."
Saulo's eyes brightened.
"Well, that sounds interesting."
He inserted the cube into the datapad's port and fired it up. A glow filled the cavern, bluish-green and so much brighter than dying firelight. Holographic lines manifested, crisscrossing every which way. Some were accompanied by numbers, others by text. Saulo rotated his datapad so they could view it from every angle.
"What in all the galaxy is that?" Kira said.
"Beautiful,"
Paolo said.
"It's a blueprint," Saulo said.
"For what?" asked Han.
"Not sure. A shield, I think. No, a shield generator. It's..."
Saulo swore, loudly and colorfully, using words Han had never heard before.
"What?"
Kira demanded.
"What's wrong?"
"Han, what have you gotten me into?"
Saulo asked.
"These blueprints are Imperial property. They're stamped confidential, rated Admiral and above."
"You're kidding me," Han said.
"Would someone please tell me what's going on?"
Kira demanded.
"These plans belong to the Empire," Han told her. "Lady Proxima, the Kaldana Syndicate, the droid Gorpa, they were all bidding on secret Imperial tech."
Kira opened her mouth, closed it, and finally said,
"Saulo, are you sure?"
He nodded.
"I'm from Coruscant, remember?"
"Well, that explains the size of the bids," she murmured.
"I saw plans like this all the time in shop class," Saulo said. "Just, you know, not confidential. We made low-end motivators, power couplings, even small droids. But this is..."
He peered closer, and the bluish lines reflected in his big black eyes.
"What? This is what?" Han said.
"This is complicated. Totally outside my experience. Part of it is still encrypted, a big part. The text refers over and over to someone called the Engineer. Does that mean anything to either of you?"
Han shook his head, then asked Kira, who also shook her head. Saulo glared at them both.
"What's going on exactly?"
Paolo stared at Saulo and chewed his biscuit. Han didn't really trust Saulo, but that made him no worse than anyone else. And like it or not, the Rodian was part of it now. If Rebolt came looking with his hounds and found Saulo helping him, he'd be just as dead as Han and Kira.
"I think we should tell him," Han said. "Everything."
Kira said, "Now that he's helped us, he's in as much trouble as we are." She glanced over at Paolo, still crouched by the fire, admiring the blueprints floating in the air. "And I guess that means our friend will overhear, but I don't think there's any help for it." So they told Saulo, leaving nothing out. His bug eyes got buggier and buggier, until finally he slid to the ground and collapsed in a heap, muttering to himself.
"Saulo," Han said, patting his shoulder. "You okay there, pal?"
"We have to give the cube back," Saulo said. "Before we all die."
"Yeah, great idea," Han said dryly. "We should just walk up to the Kaldana Syndicate, tap them on the shoulder, and hand it over."
Kira said, "Maybe if we give it to Lady Proxima in exchange for our lives, she'll..." She stopped herself. Han didn't even have to say anything.
Sorry, bad idea, she said.
The droid Gooper won the bid, Han pointed out. We could give it to them, let them complete the transaction, wash our hands of it.
No, Solo said. The droid Gotra are a bunch of terrorists.
Paolo seemed alarmed at Solo's raised voice. Han kept an eye on the fellow as he translated the comment about terrorists.
How do you know that? Kira asked. How does he know that?
Everyone on Coruscant knows that, Solo answered.
What is the droid Gora? Han asked.
Solo's mouth opened, then closed.
I don't actually know.
He doesn't know.
Anyway, giving it to them won't keep the Kaldorna off our backs, Kira said.
What about the engineer? Solo said. The mastermind behind the technology. If we gave it back to the original owner, maybe we'd get some gratitude, some protection.
You really want to tangle with Imperials? Han asked.
Might not be so bad, Solo said. The galaxy has been pretty peaceful since Palpatine became Emperor. They're the good guys, right?
I'm not dealing with the Empire, Kira said. Having a high-end blaster and a fancy uniform doesn't keep anyone from being a thug.
Hey, you understood that? Han said.
Understood what? She said. I don't care what Solo said. I'm not messing with Imperials. That's always a bad plan.
Well, I think we should give it to the Kaldorna. Get them off our backs, Han said.
I vote for the Empire, said Solo.
What if... Kira's voice trailed off, but her eyes were wide. Her lips parted.
What?
Han nudged. Her voice was small, almost apologetic when she said, What if we sold it? We'd be rich. So rich. She held up the biscuit and stared at it. We'd never have to eat rats or dog food again.
And how would we arrange that? Han said. Don't get me wrong, I like money as much as the next guy, but we don't have the contacts, the influence.
You might, she said. You've been cultivating contacts all over the city. Don't think I haven't noticed.
And you've been planning something, he retorted. Don't think I haven't noticed.
They glared at each other. Solo watched them both. Paolo stared at Solo.
Trying to sell the cube would probably get us all killed, Solo said finally. We have no weapons, no experience. We'd be the most hated beings in this sector.
Han translated and Kira sighed. I think Solo's right, she conceded. Trying to sell the cube would be interpreted as a double cross by every single organization involved. Still, she shrugged. Better to do the double cross than be double crossed, right? Han frowned.
It's also better to be poor and alive than rich and dead. Trying to sell it could get us killed.
They were silent for a long moment. The fire popped. Paolo stuck a finger in his mouth and began picking at his yellow teeth. Han hated long silences. He said,
So, miss, I always have a plan. What should we do?
Be quiet, she snapped. I'm thinking... Paolo stood and moved toward the crack in the wall.
More visitors, he said.
Solo swore. Han and Kira both jumped to their feet.
Now what?
Solo whispered. Distant footsteps pounded through the sewer. They had moments before they would be discovered. We run, Kira said. Chapter 7
But where? Han said.
Kira knew exactly where they should go, but it was hard to form the words. She'd kept the secret for so long.
Kira, Han said. You look like a hungry needle gawp, opening and closing your mouth like that.
I have a place, she blurted. A safe house. I've been maintaining it for 2 years. It has supplies, a little bit of money. No one knows about it. If we can just get there, we'll be safe for a while.
I was right, Han said. I knew you had a secret!
Su'ulo
said something, but Kira only caught the word for distance. She could understand a few words of Hatties, but she wasn't about to let anyone know.
He wants to know how far, Han said.
It's all the way across town, in the Bossoms.
Han's eyebrows went up.
Why would you keep a safe house there? That district is even worse than...
I have my reasons, all right?
Kira's heart was racing, and only partly because the White Worm scrum rats were on their way. She hated revealing the safe house to anyone. It was so much a part of her.
We can't get all the way to the Bottoms underground, Han said. The sewers empty into a couple of those deep water canals. It would put us right out in the open.
Su'ulo chirped something.
Yeah, of course it's faster to use the bridges, but who has money for a speeder cab?
Han responded.
Not me.
We could steal money, Kira said.
Su'ulo jumped to his feet, even as he removed the cube and powered down his data pad. The blueprint disappeared, leaving the cave feeling gloomy and cold. He stashed everything in his pack, chattering all the while.
Su'ulo has an idea, Han said. He knows where we can get access to a speeder. He says it's just outside the financial district, and we can be there before the sun goes down.
That was all Kira needed to hear to get started.
Eat your dog biscuits now, because the route to the financial district will require us to swim. You both know how to swim, right?
They nodded at her.
We'll have to keep that data cube out of the water, Han pointed out.
Su'ulo said something angrily.
I don't know how to keep it dry. Hold it in your mouth or something. Rodians have dry mouths, right? Drier than humans, anyway.
We'll figure it out when we get there, Kira said. Now let's go!
She hated how necessity forced them to head out into danger without a solid plan. Her mind poked at possibilities, potential routes, contingencies, as they packed up their few items and moved toward the crack and the low tunnel beyond.
Friends, no!
Paolo said. Kira paused and looked at Han, who simply seemed confused.
What?
He asked.
Friends, stay.
Look, Han said. It's been great hanging out, and we really appreciate it, but we have to go before the White Worms find us.
Paolo scowled, and Kira's heart started racing. Suddenly he looked a lot less like friend Paolo, and more like the scary old man Paolo she'd been worried about all along.
Maybe he wants more food, she whispered urgently. Do we have any more biscuits?
Su'ulo fumbled with his bag, and Han impatiently reached in to grab one. He leaned forward, offered it to Paolo.
Here you go, he said. Is this what you want?
Paolo's eyes narrowed, and his hand bolted out to grab the hard lump of fish bread. Kira relaxed. The withered old creature screamed mournfully, flinging the biscuit at the wall, where it exploded in a shower of crumbs.
Friends, stay!
Friends, go!
Shouted Han, shoving Kira and Su'ulo through the crack. He backed out after them, fending off Paolo's clutching hands, while Paolo whimpered like an injured puppy.
Which way do we go? Kira asked.
That way,
Han said, pointing down a low tunnel, opposite the way they had entered.
Run!
Kira pushed Su'ulo ahead of her and started running. He babbled something she couldn't understand, but she pressed a hand into his back and willed him to run harder. Han caught up with her just as the tunnel twisted.
Where are we going? She shouted at him. I have no idea. I just know that Rebold and his hounds are in the other direction.
Paolo's wail of sadness chased them down the tunnel. If they hadn't been running for their lives, Kira would have stopped and strangled Han that instant. He didn't have any kind of plan at all. Just a vague set of instincts that might be a gut reaction, or might just be gas caused by eating dog biscuits.
That way,
he shouted to Su'ulo, who turned down the side tunnel Han was pointing to. Kira still had no idea where they were going, but the ceiling was a little higher, giving them more room to run. Suddenly, the tunnel sloped downward. Su'ulo's feet slipped out from under him, and he splashed onto his backside and disappeared down a dark chute. Kira stopped just in time at the very brink, and then Han bumped into her.
They lost their footing in the slime, tumbled into the muck, and went careening down. She braced herself for a hard impact into a grate or wall, but she shot out of the hole and dropped onto a giant bed of glowing fungus. Kira rolled out of the way just in time to avoid Han landing on her. Kira scrambled to her feet, furious.
You idiot! You had no idea where we were going. You could have gotten us trapped or killed.
Su'ulo said something she couldn't understand, but Han said, I know. Han's admission took some of the fire out of her. Wait, was he admitting he'd been wrong?
You know what?
She asked suspiciously. He stood up and paused to wipe some of the sticky fungus off his elbows and out of his hair. Then he looked at her with a grin.
I know exactly where we are. And you do, too.
She turned and really looked at the room. Knee-deep, stagnant water, a variety of entrance shafts high on the wall. One main tunnel entering into the chamber, and a large circular drainage hole at the far end of the room. The sound of water trickling into the room and water dripping out, it was all very familiar. Lady Proxima called it the Cistern of Discipline. Worms were sent here after storms to scavenge for flotsam. Sometimes they dropped nets down through the drainage hole to catch fleek eels and copper grins. More often, though, white worms were sent here as punishment for not meeting Lady Proxima's quotas or missing curfew too many times. The scrum rats would be tossed through the drainage hole into the giant underground basin below. If they could swim to the edge and find their way back, their transgressions were forgiven. Kira had made it back, but not everyone did. The littlest one struggled especially.
This is the entrance to the Cistern of Discipline, she said.
This is the entrance to the Cistern of Discipline, Han said enthusiastically.
So if we go down the hole, we can swim to the drainage tubes and make our way down toward the bottoms.
Right,
Han said, jerking a thumb the other direction.
Or we can sneak back through the other tunnel toward the white worm den and...
Han!
Su'ulo interrupted.
Not now, Han said impatiently. I'm trying to explain my plan.
Kira heard and then saw the same thing Su'ulo did. She whispered urgently,
Han! Don't move.
What?
He snapped, spinning around.
Just because...
The words died on his lips. Standing at the entrance to the tunnel were three of Rebolt's hounds. Their large, bone-white bodies were machines of glistening muscle. The sharp wedges of their heads ended in ferocious jaws that could tear a man in half, framed by tentacle-like growths. Where the hounds were, Rebolt would not be far behind. The lead hound sniffed the air and growled. The other two spread out to flank Kira, Su'ulo, and Han.
Get behind me,
Han whispered, putting himself between Kira and the hounds.
All the better for me to escape, she whispered,
and started edging back toward the drainage hole. Han followed her, step by step. Su'ulo, on the other hand, walked right toward the hounds. He was going to sacrifice himself to give them a chance to escape, which was a terrible plan. He had the data cube, and they needed it if they were going to have any chance of survival.
Don't do it, Su'ulo, she pleaded.
His one good antenna quirked in puzzlement, and then he reached into his bag. Maybe he was going to throw her the cube, and pulled out the rest of the dog biscuits. The hounds closed on him like they were seeing an old friend. He gave one biscuit to each and patted their sides while they rubbed their tentacled snouts against his face. Rebolt's voice echoed down the tunnel, shouting for his hounds. The largest hound swiveled his head toward the voice, and then back toward Su'ulo, growling again.
We need to go, she said,
and she turned and ran for the drain. There was nothing to do but jump. She folded her arms tight to her chest, closed her eyes, and leaped. The drop felt like it lasted forever, although it couldn't have been more than 9 or 10 meters. She hit the water with a hard splash. Cold darkness closed in over her head.
It was too easy to get disoriented in dark water, but she knew a trick. She calmed herself and allowed her body to sink until her boots met sludge. Then she kicked off the bottom and shot to the surface. As she treaded water and gasped for air, a second and third splash landed nearby. Han's head popped up first, and he shook it like a wet dog, scattering water everywhere. Zaulo popped up a moment later, and she could see the light glinting in his huge black eyes.
"The Daisy Cube," she said. "We can't get it wet."
Zaulo opened his mouth and showed her the data cube on his tongue. Han nodded enthusiastically.
"Good thinking."
She was set to argue that a mouth wasn't much drier than a cistern, but the hounds stood at the edge of the drain above them and started howling. They had only seconds until Rebolt showed up, and if he didn't have a blaster, the white worms who followed him would. As one, they started swimming toward the far end of the reclamation basin and the overflow tubes. She dreaded the sound of a splash behind them, but no one followed. And moments later, they had climbed, breathless and dripping wet, onto a ledge at the end of the basin. Rebolt's voice echoed through the massive underground chamber.
"Come back! It will be worse for you if you don't!"
Kira was forming a suitably sharp response, but looking back at the water, she saw ripples from a school of fish, or something larger, cutting toward them. The white worm scum rats weren't the only ones who visited this cistern to find something to eat.
"Let's go!"
she cried, pushing Han and Zaulo up the metal rungs of a ladder to the nearest overflow tube. Seconds later, she clambered in behind them. It was pitch black.
"We can't walk down this tube blind," she said. "We could fall down a shaft, miss our turn. Zaulo, maybe you can use your datapad to light our way."
Zaulo mumbled something in reply, but she couldn't understand him.
"He says we have to wait for the datapad to dry out before turning it back on,"
Han translated.
"Can't he take the cube out of his mouth now?"
She looked down at her own soaked clothes and wet hands.
"Never mind. There's no place drier to put it."
Zaulo mumbled something again, but with the data cube in his mouth, even her basic Hatties failed her.
"No, I'm not trusting some old superstition," Han said. "And Kira isn't either."
Zaulo blurted out a longer phrase, and Han calmed down.
"Oh, that works," he said.
Then to Kira he explained,
"He says not to worry. He can see really well in the dark."
"That's great," she said. "Why don't you lead the way, Zaulo?"
He said something else she couldn't understand. She waited for Han to translate, and then, after a moment, realized she was standing there alone. The only sound was her own breathing. They'd left without her.
"I will not panic. I am not a panicker."
With one hand on the wall, she began feeling her way down the black tunnel, hurrying until she stumbled right into someone.
"Han! Zaulo!"
"We're right here," whispered Han. "Maybe you should hold on to my sleeve, and I'll hold on to Saulo's, so we don't get separated."
Zaulo mumbled something.
Han said, "Yeah, I'm cold too. Stop complaining."
Kira was beginning to shiver. Her stomach growled, and she regretted that Zaulo had given the last of the biscuits to Rebolt's hounds. She'd been running and hiding all day, and was hungry and exhausted. But they couldn't stop yet.
"Now let's move."
Hours later, feeling even hungrier and more exhausted, Zaulo led them up out of the tunnels and into a basement beneath an old warehouse. They reached a rusty arched gate that was their last remaining barrier to escape. Light drifted down from a gutter in the street above, but not much. Night was falling. They'd been running and hiding all day. The gate was old, and it seemed to barely hang on its hinges, but the latch was controlled by a modern access pad. Kira had never been here before. It was one of the few areas Lady Proxima did not have entree to. She sized up the gate. Maybe with the right amount of force applied just so, they could pop it off its hinges. She was just about to suggest as much when Han stepped forward and pressed his thumb to the reader. Something clicked.
The gate swung open.
Kira and Saulo stared at him. "Hey, I get around, okay?" he said.
Saulo bleated something. He had taken the data cube out of his mouth and was holding it in his fist. She caught the word for people.
"Yeah, I know some people here, too," Han said. "If you'd told me the speeder you had access to was at this garage, I could have gotten us here quicker. I know a shortcut."
Saulo chattered back angrily, something about trust and fodder, as the three of them stepped through the gate, closed it behind them, and found themselves confronted by a ladder. A rung was missing about two-thirds of the way up, but Kira decided it looked sound enough. Han climbed up first and disappeared through a hatch, then Saulo, and finally Kira. When her head crested the floor, her nose was assaulted by the sense of wet duracrete, overheated grease, and exhaust fumes. She climbed up onto the floor and sprung to her feet, ready for anything. Blasters, Corsec, angry droids. She needn't have worried. They were in an old warehouse, with high ceilings and pollution-fogged clear-story windows. Speeders were everywhere, every variety and color, in every possible state of repair. Beings and maintenance droids scurried all over the place, getting ready for something. A few attended the speeders themselves, checking gauges, tightening sockets, siphoning fuel from nearby tanks. Two humans and one droid greeted Han. He'd obviously been here before. No one else paid them any mind. Kira felt her breathing ease. All of a sudden, Saulo swore loudly.
Togawa!
Kira jumped before she realized that he was angry, not frightened. She was going to have to get him to teach her a few choice Hatties swear words. He obviously knew several. He and Han talked back and forth a bit. Kira gathered that their arrival was terribly timed. A race was about to start, and the speeder Saulo had access to was no doubt lined up and ready to go.
"Which speeder?" Han asked. "I know a lot of people who rent space in this garage."
"Kalopa,"
Saulo told him.
"You're kidding me," Han said. "Rizo is your brother?"
Saulo made a sad sound.
"Yeah, don't get me started about family," Han said with a knowing sigh.
"It's your brother's speeder we're looking for?" Kira asked. Saulo nodded. "Then why don't you just ask him to borrow it?" she suggested. "He wouldn't mind sitting out one race, right?" Saulo protested vehemently.
"He and his brother don't talk," Han said. "Or maybe Saulo doesn't talk to Rizo. They haven't said a word to each other in 6 months. Anyway, he says there's absolutely no way Rizo would skip a race. Racing is everything to him."
Kira didn't know much about racing, only that there was the legal kind and the illegal kind. And the kind that happened in this part of the city, with these color-drenched, souped-up speeders, was definitely the illegal kind. It was such a part of the local culture, though, that Corsec mostly looked the other way. Sometimes a fatal accident would occur, or property owned by an important citizen would get damaged, and Corsec would make a show of busting someone and decrying the practice of illegal street racing. But after a little time had passed, and the good people of Coronet had forgotten to be shocked and angry, everything would go back to normal. "Maybe someone else has a speeder we could borrow," Kira suggested. Han and Saulo gaped at her.
"What? What did I say wrong?"
"You don't just ask to borrow someone's speeder," Han said.
Saulo nodded vigorously.
"It's like asking to borrow someone's spouse, or their soul."
"That makes no sense." Han looked down at the ground.
"It does to some of us."
"You have a better idea?"
"Well, no."
A maintenance droid flew by, startling them all, but it paid them no mind.
"I mean, yes," Han said.
He looked up at her, his face shining with that abominable grin.
"Uh-oh," said Kira.
Han grabbed Kira and Saulo by the shoulders and brought them close so the three of them were head-to-head. He whispered,
"We grab Rezo, tie him up, take his place in the race."
Kira blinked. "That might be the worst idea I've ever..."
"Hear me out. The race route takes us right down Naro-Sinar Boulevard, across all the downtown bridges.
When we're near the bottoms, we'll veer off the track. No one will question what happened. They'll just assume we blew a valve or something.
A few speeders rumbled past, cruising out toward the street. One belched dirty gray smoke. Another whined, high-pitched and metallic, like a rusty nail scraping a mirror. The race was starting soon. Whatever they decided, they had to do it quickly. All right. Maybe that's not the worst plan, Kira admitted. Su'ulo, what do you think? Su'ulo jabbered something while bobbing his head up and down. Han gave him a weird look, but he translated, "He loves the idea of tying up his brother. Apparently they really don't get along." "Okay, let's do it," Kira said. "Su'ulo, lead the way." Su'ulo set off toward the far corner of the garage, and the others followed.
"How are we going to do this?" Han whispered.
"Weezo hasn't seen his brother in a long time, right?" Kira said. "I figure he'll be really surprised. While he's distracted, you sneak up behind him."
"And do what?"
"I don't know. Hit him over the head with a wrench or something."
"Kira, I don't want to hurt anyone."
"Better him than us." Su'ulo froze in his tracks. He turned and whispered something.
"That's Rizo," Han said, pointing.
Another young Rodian crouched beside a speeder. His skin had a slightly yellower cast than Su'ulo's, and he seemed a couple of years older. A pair of massive goggles hung from his neck, sized for Rodian eyes. But it was the speeder Rizo was tinkering with that took Kira by surprise. It was huge and unwieldy, as green and shiny as an emerald, and it hovered closer to the ground than all the other speeders. Kira couldn't tell if the repulsor lift was broken, or if it was meant to be that way. Fluorescent green light rimmed the lower edge, making the oil-slicked cement beneath glow like a rotting swamp. Two stems, each ending in a disc, protruded from the hood. It took Kira a moment to realize the twin receivers were colored and contoured to look like Rodian antennae.
"Holy moons! That thing looks like a giant green bug," Kira whispered.
"I was thinking hover brick," said Han. "It gets worse, though."
"What do you mean?"
Rizo was oblivious to their presence. He leaned over the seat and hit a switch on the console. Holographic flames shot out from the fender and rear spoiler, dancing bluish and hazy in the air. Kira imagined that while the speeder was racing, the flames would appear to stream behind.
"That's what I mean," Han said. "Also, he removed the dampener from the engine coil, so it would be as loud as possible."
Sure enough, Rizo fired it up, and the whole warehouse rumbled so loudly, Kira felt it deep in her chest. She stretched on her tiptoes and leaned toward Han's ear, so he could hear over the noise.
"We should make our move now! That horrible sound will cover any scuffle!"
Han nodded, but then paused.
"Are we sure we want to do this?" he asked them both.
Su'ulo twittered something in Hatties that even Kira could tell was an enthusiastic affirmative.
"No, I don't have a better idea," Han said glumly.
With Su'ulo leading the way, the three of them crept forward. Chapter 8 Han had been in his share of scuffles, sure. Like the time that Grindlid caught him cheating at Sabacc. Well, not cheating, exactly. He was still figuring out how the game was played, and had made an honest mistake. Then, like always, Han had faced him down. He either came away from a fight victorious, or crawled away bloody, but he didn't back down. In fact, he preferred direct confrontation to innuendo, sneaking around, or the complicated planning Kira seemed to prefer. But that didn't mean he went looking for trouble. And it didn't mean he particularly liked hurting people. So as Su'ulo walked up to his brother and tapped him on the shoulder, Han's gut was in a knot. Rizo spun around, and his long snout mouth dropped open.
"Su'ulo!"
he squeaked out.
"What are you doing here?"
Han grabbed a Pilex driver that was lying on a tool cart and began to circle around behind Rizo.
"Rizo!"
Su'ulo said,
his voice full of barely contained rage.
I see you've spent even more of our inheritance. Hollow flames? Really? I thought you said the money had run out. I won some, he said, wiping his hands on his pants. By racing, I'm getting a lot better.
Su'ulo snorted. Han raised the Pilex driver and prepared to whack Rizzo over the head. Then he got a better idea. A long rag swung from Rizzo's back pocket. Han whipped it out, flipped it over Rizzo's head and into his mouth, and yanked him backward. Rizzo started to flail, reaching for the gag. But Han kicked the back of his knee. Rizzo crumbled to the ground, dragging Han with him.
Someone grab his arms, quick! Han said. There's some cable on the tool cart.
A small form darted forward. Before Han could blink, a fist crashed into Rizzo's face. The Rodian boy swayed a moment, then slumped over, unconscious. Han looked up to find Kira standing over them, cradling her right fist.
Ouch, she said.
That hurt.
I'm sure Rizzo sympathizes, he said dryly.
Here, help me get him out of sight.
Su'ulo ran forward.
Is he okay?
I think so, Han said, dragging Rizzo's limp form behind the speeder. Just knocked out is all. You hit people often?
He asked Kira.
I've been wanting to hit someone all day, she said.
Anyone in particular?
She glared at him.
Forget I asked.
That was some hook. Han had been on the streets a long time, and he could count on one hand the number of times he'd seen someone get knocked out with a single hit from a human. Maybe Kira had an aptitude for fighting. She seemed to have an aptitude for a lot of things.
We can't leave him in the middle of the garage, Kira said, looking around to see if they'd been noticed.
The garage was nearly empty now, with all the speeders outside getting ready to race.
We have to stash him somewhere.
There's a tool closet over there,
Su'ulo suggested.
Everyone uses that closet, Han said.
He looked back and forth between Su'ulo and Kira. He knew exactly where they should stash Rizzo, but saying as much would reveal his most closely guarded secret. Or maybe not. Maybe he could manage to only sort of reveal it.
Over there,
Han said, indicating a direction with his head.
That gray speeder, hurry!
Kira and Su'ulo each grabbed a leg. Rizzo swinging between them, they moved toward the very heart of everything Han had been working toward for the past 2 years.
Huh,
said Kira as they approached. I don't know much about speeders, but isn't this one missing its engine?
Yeah,
he said, already regretting this.
That's why we can stash Rizzo here. The whole engine compartment is empty.
And check out that windshield, she went on relentlessly. It looks like it was salvaged from an old flash speeder. Holy moons, what a piece of junk.
It's not junk,
he snapped, before he could think better of it. Her eyebrows went up, and then she burst out laughing.
This is your speeder. This is why you're almost always late getting back to the lair.
Han opened the access hood.
I think you mean always almost late, he grumbled.
Su'ulo and Kira helped him lift and shove Rizzo until the older Rodian fell into the empty compartment, all in a heap. Han slammed the compartment closed.
This speeder doesn't look like much, he felt compelled to explain. But I don't care about that. It's going to be the fastest speeder the Corellian streets have ever seen. I'm building the repulsor lift from scratch, see? Then I'm going to add stabilizers for extra maneuverability. Maybe paint it blue.
Kira shrugged.
If you say so.
What are you doing?
Came a distinctly feminine voice.
The three world.
BJ,
Han said, putting his hands up.
I can explain.
A mechanical repair droid stood before them, hands fisted at her waist. She had a single round eye in the middle of her gunmetal gray head, and a grill for a mouth. A brown tool belt was slung over one shoulder.
You know each other?
Kira asked. But her eyes were darting everywhere, evaluating.
That girl never stopped thinking.
BJ-64 is a friend, Han assured her. She's been helping me figure some things out. You trust me, don't you, B? You know I wouldn't do anything wrong.
BJ-64 whipped a hex wrench from her tool belt and brandished it, advancing on Han.
Without a good reason, he amended hastily. You know I wouldn't do anything wrong without a good reason.
Rezo rents space in this garage just like you, BJ-64 said. That means he's guaranteed safety for him and his speeder. I saw what you did. I'm afraid I have to calm the garage owner.
A horn sounded somewhere outside, followed by cheering.
The first race is off, Su'ulo said. We can still make the second if we hurry.
BJ-64 said,
No racing for any of you tonight.
Look, Han said. We're not going to hurt Rezo. I mean, any more than we already did. We just need to use his speeder for a while.
That thing? She exclaimed. That abomination? The only good use for Rezo's speeder is molten scrap.
She continued to advance, hex wrench held high.
I'll make a deal with you, B. You let us go, don't calm anyone, and I'll strip Rezo's speeder.
The hex wrench faltered in the air.
Oh?
We'll remove the hollow flames attachment, strip the extra fuel pump, and the bounce package.
The underlighting, too? She said. The battery compartment creates a drag, you know, and when he puts it on the flash setting, it causes a hitch in the idle.
She was listening. This was going to work.
Absolutely. The underlighting goes, too.
I guess the antennae should stay. They're part of his cultural heritage, as he puts it.
Sure, B. Whatever you say.
She lowered the hex wrench.
Fine. Take that thing out of my garage. Can I free Rezo from your engine compartment after the races?
We'd appreciate it if you did.
How are you going to pilot it? She asked. His controls are encrypted.
Leave that to me, said Su'ulo. Come on. We have to hurry.
Han waved jauntily to his friend.
Thanks, B. See you soon. He hoped. If he didn't get himself killed tonight.
What was that about? Kira asked as they ran for the emerald green hover brick. How did you know what to say to that droid?
I'll explain later.
They reached Rezo's speeder, which was still idling loudly, ready to go.
You sure you can do this, Su'ulo?
Completely sure.
Su'ulo closed his eyes, breathed through his snout for a moment, and then said calmly,
The Force will be with me.
Whatever you say, pal.
Su'ulo wasn't the only religious person Han had known, and it seemed that the poorer people got on Corellia, the more its centers for religious worship overflowed. He'd heard that the Temple of the True Vine now offered 3 services per day to accommodate. Han didn't buy any of it, not one word. He didn't believe in any god, not a maker or a force, neither a sun nor a moon. But if someone took comfort and inspiration from religion, who was he to argue? As long as they didn't argue with him. The speeder dashboard was a jumble of gauges and wires. Han had no idea how Su'ulo was going to figure it out. But after composing himself, the Rodian reached right in. He plucked a wire here, reattached it there, changed a setting, then plugged his data pad into a port and keyed in a few things with his long suction cup fingers. The speeder lowered itself to the ground for easy access, and the door slid open. Han couldn't believe it.
How did you do that?
Su'ulo shrugged.
I never ask how I'm going to do something. I just believe I can do it.
Huh. Han started to climb in.
Into the back seat, Kira ordered. I'm piloting.
Han wanted to drive this speeder so badly, it was like a pain in his chest.
You know how to pilot a speeder?
He asked. I had to learn for one of Lady Proxima's assignments. I've had a few lessons.
Well, Han could drive a little too, but he'd never had lessons.
Reluctantly, he climbed into the back seat.
Su'ulo followed. They slid the door shut, and Kira gently guided the speeder from the garage bay and into the Corellian night.
I can't believe we're doing this, Kira said. I can't believe this is working.
It's not working yet, Han pointed out.
Rumbling speeders were lined up two wide and several deep. The only race position remaining was the back left. It was the absolute worst position to pull in a street race. Luckily, they didn't have to win. They just needed to make a good show of it while getting across town. The speeder lurched forward as Kira guided it into position.
Sorry about that, she called. This accelerator is touchy.
You sure you know what you're doing? He called back.
The pale blue holographic flames shimmied and danced around them.
Just punch the accelerator when it's time to go and don't crash, right?
Han had a bad feeling.
It's good we ended up in the rear position, Kira said over her shoulder. There's no one behind to keep an eye on us, see our amateur driving. And we can just drift away once we're across town.
She had barely finished her sentence when another speeder pulled in right behind them.
Blast,
Kira said as Su'ulo swore, using a string of words that Han was pretty sure described a Gamorrean in an anatomically improbable position. The speeder behind them was deepest black, and it rumbled heavily. Han couldn't see the pilot. The speeder's headlamps were too bright, and they fluttered, giving him a slight headache. Han figured it was a purposeful modification, meant to confuse other racers.
Don't look at the light, Han warned Kira. It's meant to throw you off.
He saw her hands tighten on the controls.
You can do this, he added.
Kira was good at everything, he told himself. And she'd had lessons. She'd be fine. The street was dark, dangerously so. When it came to illegal street racing, no one bothered to light the routes or follow standard safety protocols. The speeders themselves lit the street, and a soft glow came from either side as onlookers keyed into data pads, making last-second bets. A nimbus of light far ahead marked Central Coronet and its resident nightlife. The race would take them right past it, into the darker, more dangerous part of the city. A Pollowick woman strode between the speeders toward the front, sashaying as she went. She held aloft a large white flag in her skinny arms, grimed with dirt and rust. The fabric rippled in the night breeze. The crowd went silent. It seemed that the thunder of idling speeders was the only sound in the world. It surrounded Han, filled him up, buoyed him. He found himself clutching his right hand, as if he could prep the accelerator by the force of his will. The Pollowick woman waved the flag. Around and around it went, until suddenly she swished it down and out of sight. The speeders ahead of them burst forward. Kira hit the accelerator, and their green brick lurched forward, swung crazily to the left, and almost tipped over.
Kira!
Han yelled.
Sorry!
She yelled back. But she got the speeder righted and zoomed to catch up with the others. Hollow flames streamed behind them, making the speeder seem as if it were on fire. Wind slicked Han's hair back, and his eyes stung, streaming with tears. He should have thought to snag racing goggles for all of them. No matter, this was going to work. Kira was doing just fine. They approached their first turn. They were several lengths behind the pack, except for the black speeder with flickering lights, which seemed content to draft on them for a while. No worries. In fact, it was better not to be in a hurry. Still, Han couldn't help yearning for a little more speed, a little more excitement. He wanted to see those other speeders up close and in action, listen to their purring repulsor lift engines, breathe deep of their exhaust. Was there any better smell than speeder exhaust? He couldn't think of one. His breath hitched when he realized something important. Kira was not braking or banking for the turn. Su'ulo started hollering that she was going too fast.
Yes! Kira yelled. I heard these racers take turns hard. Best way to corner efficiently.
Experienced racers, sure. Not someone who'd only piloted a speeder a handful of times.
Kira slammed into the turn. The rear end of the speeder skittered out from under them, careening into the base of a street lamp. Han's neck jerked with the impact, and he grabbed at the roll bar,